Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit KYWNewsRadio.com or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. Sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to our weekly look at the stories that have been making headlines in Philadelphia and the region. My name is Matt Leon, and over the next hour, we will bring in KYW News Radio reporters to break down the stories you have been talking about. A final vote on the School District of Philadelphia's facilities plan is punted to next week.
Technically, the board said it would adjourn its meeting until next Thursday.
Mike DiNardo will have all the details. Then Kristen Johansson will tell us about a wild Tuesday in Northeast Philadelphia.
On the radio, you heard these officers just going kind of crazy, being like, oh my God, a car just came into our building.
Then we check in with Jim Melwert to get the latest on budget negotiations in Harrisburg.
Four Republicans did join all Democrats in voting in favor.
Pat Lowe will tell us about the alarming odyssey for a Montgomery County man that started with an email.
5 hours later, he got an email from Google saying the government had subpoenaed his account.
Dave Uram will break down the Eagles' top pick from this week's NFL draft.
He's 5'11", 192 pounds. From Los Alamitos, California.
And then we catch up with John McDevitt to find out what a former Philly star is up to these days.
Lidge is currently researching the Etruscan civilization in central Italy.
All that is ahead over the next hour. I hope you'll join us for The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, and we will get started right after this.
You say you hosted public listening and learning sessions, but I've been listening too, and I learned that no one wants this.
Asking for involvement from stakeholders and then coming up with a completely alternative plan is not authentic community engagement.
We start this edition of The Week in Philly talking schools. On Thursday, the Philadelphia School Board punted on a vote on the long-debated school facilities plan.
We recognize that the future of our school facilities is indeed a matter of significant interest that requires the highest level of collaboration.
For more, let's bring in KYW's Mike DiNardo. Now, Mike, this decision was actually announced prior to the actual school board meeting, right?
Yeah, Matt, the public announcement came a little before 2 p.m. before the 4 p.m. meeting. Technically, the board said it would adjourn its meeting until next Thursday, at which time it would take up the facilities plan that would close 17 schools. Now, this came after requests by several city council members that the vote be delayed. Council, of course, is debating the mayor's rideshare tax to fund schools. And while council doesn't have a vote on the school closure plan, they do have say over how much money the city provides to the district. So council was using a little bit of its leverage here. At last Thursday night's meeting, though, the board heard more than 3 hours of testimony from students and parents and teachers opposed to the facilities plan, including Parkway Northwest teacher Rodrigo Fernandez.
Didn't you hear the families? Didn't you hear the students? Didn't you hear the teachers and city council members? Nobody wants this plan.
Matt, the mayor, for her part, issued a statement saying she supported postponing the vote to give council more time.
Now, we should know earlier in the week, you mentioned 17 schools. We had been under the assumption it was 18. The plan was altered. One school came off. What school and kind of what saved it?
Yeah, it was Ludlow Elementary School in North Philadelphia. Superintendent Tony Watlington said the district looked at Ludlow's location at 6th and Master, two blocks above Girard, and thought it would be best to keep it in the district's footprint.
So what's next again here? We're just basically looking ahead to this coming Thursday, right?
Exactly. The school board resumes its meeting next Thursday, April 30th at 4 p.m. Watlington will make a presentation on the plan, and the board will then weigh in and presumably vote. Now, even if the facilities plan, which would also modernize 169 buildings, if that plan is adopted, any closures would still have to go through a state-mandated public hearing process, and it could still change at any point along the way. But right now, any closures wouldn't happen until the fall of 2027.
The mayor continuing to push city council to approve her $1 a trip rideshare tax that would help close the district's budget deficit. And she made the push this week direct to council for this, right? What happened?
Yeah, she went directly to council chambers and gave them a bit of a history lesson on council approving things like the liquor by the drink tax and cigarette tax to generate money for schools, and she asked them to step up again. Matt, the city has to do this because, unlike every other school district in the state, Philadelphia's school board doesn't have taxing authority. It relies on revenue from the city and state to operate.
So right now, where do you think the wind seems to be blowing, in what direction with regards to council's support of this rideshare tax?
Tough to say. I haven't taken a head count, but council member Curtis Jones, during a hearing on the rideshare tax on Tuesday, said at the beginning of that day, the rideshare tax may have had 9 votes on council, enough to pass. But at the end of the day, after hearing school district testimony, he said it was down to 6, which would not be enough to pass. Let's just say that, at least right now, there is far from unanimous support for a new tax to help a district planning to close schools, all while council members are facing re-election next year.
Also wanted to shift gears to SEPTA. You had a story this week, some very encouraging news with regards to crime on SEPTA.
Yeah, it's a continuation of a downward trend. In the first 3 months of this year, serious crimes on SEPTA, including robbery and aggravated assault, are down 30% over the first quarter last year. SEPTA has had a full complement of transit police officers on the job, concentrating on low-level crimes, smoking, drug use, loitering, and fare evasion. And let's talk about fare evasion. While it still happens a lot, we see it all the time, it is down 10%. More officers writing citations for jumping the turnstiles. And physical things like those new nearly full-length fare gates, they are at 10 stations right now. They'll be installed at 13 more stations in the coming year.
Thank you very much, Mike. KYW's Mike DiNardo joining us. More coming up on this edition of The Week in Philly. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Week in Philly. And Northeast Philadelphia was ground zero for a couple of wild crimes on Tuesday. For more, let's bring in KYW crime and justice reporter Kristen Johansson. And Kristen, let's start with the first incident, a morning robbery of a Brinks armored truck. What happened?
Yeah, so this happened Tuesday morning along Torresdale Avenue near Wellington Avenue. This happened in Taconi. Basically, they say that two men approached with rifles to this truck and then took off with cash in a blue SUV. They ended up finding that car later. No one was hurt, but the FBI has joined in on the investigation. They're the ones now handling the investigation.
How much do investigators believe was taken?
So they actually believe that $1.8 million is what was taken from that truck, which is obviously a lot of cash. Ironically, Matt, there were a couple Brinks truck robberies that happened over the last few years that happened this week in federal court, just kind of coincidental. But these are taken very seriously, these Brinks trucks, because there is so much money that's involved.
Now, this was incredibly brazen. I mean, this is almost like something out of a movie. You know, you mentioned that there were these other robberies that had appeared in federal court, but with this specific one at this point, is this believed to be a one-off? Is it connected to anything? Do they know?
They don't know, or they haven't shared, I really should say. They're always looking to see if they can piecemeal some of these crimes together, even what patterns are alike, whether there's maybe DNA that's matching. We don't know yet if this SUV was stolen, but they're obviously going to be just trying to figure out kind of the path of travel of where this SUV came from, where it was going, who got out, what video they have, and then obviously talking to the people involved, including the driver and usually the guard that driver's with.
Now, the other situation on Tuesday came in the afternoon when a man drove his car into the Philadelphia Police Department 2nd District building in Rawnhurst. What are the details here?
What's kind of interesting with this is I was actually on the phone with police about this Brinks truck robbery when they were getting calls in that there was a car into a building. They found out that this was a car into the second police district building. There were people that were actually in the lobby of this district building, just doing, I say, mundane things, you know, either filing reports, whatever, just civilians that live in that district. When all of a sudden this car comes crashing through this building, and there's people inside this building, there was just a lot of chaos. And so on the radio, you heard these officers just going kind of crazy, being like, oh my God, a car just came into our building. So we know that the commissioner, Kevin Bethel, went out there. He spoke about how this was an intentional act and that they're going to be investigating what happened.
It is clearly an absolute deliberate act based on the video that we watched. The individual was traveling in the lane of traffic and then intentionally, based on our viewpoint of the video, goes directly into the lobby of the second district.
I know there were injuries. How many people were hurt and how serious were the injuries?
So there were five civilians or people that lived there that were hurt. I think also a couple of police officers were hurt, but none of the injuries were too terrible. They were all pretty much treated right there. What the commissioner did say, though, was that there was a homeless man who was in the lobby. He normally kind of hangs out in the lobby of this district building, which, you know, this does happen from time to time with many different police district buildings, and they get to know who these people are. But that man just left and went to the bathroom like moments before this happened. So he could have been critically injured, but for the grace of God, he was not.
Now, you mentioned that the commissioner said this was intentional. A man was taken into custody. What do we know about him and what are the charges he's facing?
So this is Dufert Jolie. He is 26 years old. He's facing aggravated assault, simple assault, reckless endangerment, causing a catastrophe, other related charges. The district attorney said in this case, Larry Krasner, that he made a left turn kind of right into the building, waited for traffic to pass, and made like a left right into the building.
This is an active investigation that's being led by PPD and federal partners. I know that they are looking at all possibilities for what the motive might be.
Now, Jolie, we know, is a Haitian national. He did have his passport taken. It's being withheld, and he's being held on $1.7 million bail. We also know that officers, police went out to his house, or the house, I should say, that he lived with his father earlier that day because there was some sort of domestic dispute, some sort of argument over possibly the sale of this car, which is also an SUV.
There was mention of there being a dispute in relation to the sale of a car, and there was mention of possible return to Haiti.
We don't really know much more other than that. We don't know why he did it. They're kind of piecing that together, thinking maybe it has something to do with that earlier domestic dispute that happened, but they don't know. There was questions, obviously, of course, about mental health. I just have to mention this, that mental health evaluations happen in the court process as the court process is kind of moving along.
All right. Thank you very much, Kristen. That's KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson joining us. We need to step away. More of the Week in Philly coming up right after this.
It's the Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
We continue on this edition of the Week in Philly, and there is plenty to talk about out of Harrisburg. For this, let's bring in our KYW Suburban Bureau Chief, Jim Melward. And Jim, let's start with the state of the state budget. Haven't heard a ton about this lately. Where are lawmakers on this right now?
Well, the state House, Matt's passed what I guess we should probably call their first version. Basically, it's exactly what Governor Josh Shapiro presented in his budget proposal, a $53 billion spending plan. That's a 5.4 spending increase over the current budget. And he's again asking the legislature as part of that to legalize adult use marijuana and to tax and regulate skill games for additional revenue. But those basically have become two white whales that he and Democrats in the legislature have been hunting for years now. So whether or not they can actually get that across the finish line remains to be seen. But the House did pass the initial general funding frame. Four Republicans did join all Democrats in voting in favor. So now that puts the ball into the Senate's court.
Remind us of the timeline here. And given everything you just said, is there any hope they will actually get a budget by the deadline?
Yeah, the state constitution mandates June 30th as the budget deadline, that it must be passed by then. That has become just another day on the calendar over the past several years for several reasons. Basically, state agencies can remain open. So legislators still get paid. We can still go get a driver's license. A lot of the things that used to really put pressure on them don't exist anymore. So I do think this year there is pressure. First off, it dragged into November last year. And also, this is an election year. So they're not going to want to be dealing with budget arguments as they're going up for re-election. So I say that, but we'll see.
And you did mention in the House that four Republicans did cross party lines to vote for it. Does that kind of give you indication of which way the wind is blowing? And could that be a sign of maybe things are a little easier to come in the Senate?
Those lawmakers are, I know two were from Bucks County, maybe three are from Bucks County, and one's from Dauphin County, which are much more purple areas of Pennsylvania. So it does give me a sign that the politics and maybe the primaries aren't what we've seen in the past on the Republican side. I don't want to read too much into it, but I do think that there is something to take from that, politically speaking. As far as agreeing on a budget, that would be hard to say without individually talking to those lawmakers.
Now, in the state Senate, we did see action this week on another front, another move by Republicans to push for legislation that would prevent transgender girls from playing on female sports teams at public schools and colleges. We have heard this song before. What are the details here?
Yeah, Matt, this is a bill that is basically the same as what the state Senate passed last summer. That bill went over to the state House, got punted around different committees, and was never actually voted on in the state House. The Senate did pass this by a final vote of 30-17, with three members not voting. Three Democrats did join Republicans in voting in favor. It prevents males from playing girls or women's sports at public institutions, whether it's high school or college. And it defines gender in the bill as anatomy and genetics existing at the time of birth.
Allowing biological males to compete in women's sports threatens to undo the progress we've witnessed since the enactment of Title IX.
That's co-sponsor of the bill, Republican Judy Ward. Senate Republicans say that despite President Trump signing an executive order last February that mandates this for the country, they feel that protections need to be enshrined in law because whoever's in the White House could change that. However, Democrat Lindsey Williams, speaking for the opposition, says at a time when Pennsylvanians are trying to figure out how to make ends meet, the Senate is spending time on what she says is something that's just mean.
Kids just want to be kids. Unlike some in this building, they are not obsessed with their teammates' genitalia. I want us to stop bullying kids for political gain.
Just to kind of give an outside view on this, the Women's Law Project opposes the bill, saying, quoting from them, it fails to address enforcement, which could result in invasive physical exams and inspections of children's bodies.
And with a Democratic House and Josh Shapiro in the governor's mansion, this is going nowhere, right?
It's a safe bet. But also, when you're talking about budget negotiations, you know, the give and take part of that process. However, I think something like this is probably off the table, but I'm not going to say that definitively.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim. That is KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melward joining us. We need to step away. We will have more of this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio coming up right after this.
I was, you know, never had experienced anything like that before. But at the same time, I felt like I've got nothing to hide.
First Amendment violations aren't just about somebody literally putting a hand over your mouth. It's about government activity that chills speech.
This is The Week in Philly, and now we wanted to dig into a really alarming story centered around a man from Montgomery County and how an email sent to a government official led to him becoming the subject of an investigation. For more on this, let's bring in KYW's Pat Loeb, who's done tremendous reporting on this. And Pat, give us the backstory here. What happened?
Well, John, who would rather not use his last name for safety reasons, he read a newspaper article that really tore at his heart. It was about an Afghan refugee who had helped U.S. forces during the war, immigrated under an approved U.S. program, and now is detained and threatened with being sent
back to Afghanistan, which would be like a death sentence. And this so upset John that he emailed the ICE attorney on the case and asked him to show mercy to this refugee.
It just kind of cut me to the chase. I mean, I kind of felt like this is unconscionable. How can you do this and say that Afghanistan is a safe country to be able to go back to? You know, it's just heartbreaking. And I just felt compelled in that moment to write.
5 hours later, he got an email from Google saying the government had subpoenaed his account and he had 7 days to file an objection. And he didn't know if it was a scam, and he didn't know what the subpoena said he was supposed to have done. And he wondered if it was related to that email, but he didn't know. And trying to find out took him into this Kafkaesque experience where he felt he maybe was in trouble, but he didn't know why or how to get out of it.
I was concerned about it. You know, it was like, I don't think this is authentic, but it could possibly be. And is it possible that it's in as a consequence of what I had emailed earlier?
Before we go further, tell us a little bit about John. What's his background?
Well, he's English by birth. He married a girl from Philadelphia that he met on a trip to Israel, and they moved here in 1989, shortly after their first child was born. And he became a citizen in 1998 because he loved America. He felt the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were beautiful documents.
So what happened after he got the notice that the government, you know, wanted to investigate him? And did he eventually get an idea of what it is alleged he did?
It took him months just to get the subpoena, reaching out to Google, to the courts in Virginia, where it was supposed to have been filed. He got a lot of dead phone numbers, non-responses, and he probably wouldn't have succeeded without the Washington Post, who first told his story. And they reached out to Google and DHS. And even when he did get the subpoena, it said it was in connection with a criminal investigation. It didn't say what he was supposed to have done wrong. And then one morning,
the next thing that happened was the knocking on the door, the police patrol vehicle outside and another vehicle.
On his porch are three men and they want to talk to him.
They identified who they were from Homeland Security investigation, and they pulled up on their phone an email and they said, did you write this email? I said, yes, I wrote the email. You know, I was staggered at that point, you know, kind of like, what? Why are these people at my house feeling a little embarrassed?
Were you frightened?
Yeah, I was, you know, never had experienced anything like that before.
How far did this get?
Well, Google never did comply with a subpoena, which was an administrative subpoena, not a court-issued subpoena. So Google really did have some latitude about complying, which it hadn't initially explained. And then the ACLU took the case and asked a federal court to quash the subpoena. And in February, almost 4 months after this started, DHS withdrew the subpoena. I spoke with ACLU attorney Steve Loney.
I think it accomplished some of the goal in terms of chipping away at a much, much larger problem. And anytime we can push back and get the government to back off of a clearly inappropriate and unconstitutional position, that's good news.
Now, you mentioned that Google didn't give the info over. Did Google make a statement or anything? And how about DHS on what they were kind of fishing for here?
It did. Google emailed me a statement saying it always seeks to protect its customers' privacy and in this case did not give DHS what it was seeking. But it's been getting tens of thousands of these subpoenas since the beginning of the Trump administration, and not every case gets so much attention. And DHS sent a very short response just saying it has the right to issue these subpoenas and it was in connection with a criminal investigation.
From your conversation with him, has this changed John at all? Like from the standpoint, is he hesitant to reach out or be active politically?
He is not. He still goes to the weekly vigil at ICE headquarters in Philadelphia that started in October, just before this whole experience. And he says he would write to an ICE lawyer again if he felt moved to do it. but he'd be very careful about the wording.
If anything, it made me more determined to show up. The whole point of what I went through was mostly an intimidation exercise. It's like a deed that's standing by the water. We shall not be moved.
All right, Pat, thank you very much. KYW's Pat Loeb joining us. And you can listen to more of Pat's reporting on this story. Go to our website, kywnewsradio.com. Time for a break. We will have more of The Week in Philly coming up.
It was just trying to figure out where we can move up.
I love his toughness. Insanely competitive. There's a lot to like.
They getting a dog. This is ready to work, for real. I ain't doing no plan.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly. It is NFL Draft Weekend, and for more on that, let's talk with KYW's Dave Uram. Dave, of course, the focus here, the Eagles, originally the 23rd pick in the first round. Thursday night, they made a trade with Dallas. They move up to 20, and they select USC wide receiver Mekhi Lemon. This pick surprised you, or did you think they would go in the wide receiver direction early?
I predicted that they were going to go in the safe route of offensive line, in part because Lane Johnson, of course, is in the latter part of his career. We don't know what the future holds for some of the other offensive linemen on the team, as they were relatively banged up last season, and, you know, injuries take a toll after a while. Howie Roseman has always talked about not selecting for need, but selecting best player available, and they feel that Mekhi Lemon was at higher value than where they got him.
What can you tell us about him?
Well, he's 5'11", 192 pounds, soon to be 22 years old in about a month or so, from Los Alamitos, California, in Southern California. All-American as a junior at USC. 79 receptions as a junior, 1,156 receiving yards, 11 receiving touchdowns, 2 rushing touchdowns. Howie Roseman, the Eagles general manager, and head coach Nick Sirianni were very high on Mekhi Lemon.
Has the ability to separate out of the slot. He can play outside. Physical player. Really good with the ball in his hands. Good in zone coverage. Has really good instincts.
Insane ability to catch the ball in contested situations. I love his toughness.
They really loved this player's makeup as a player and as a person.
Remind us what the trade details were, Dave.
The trade details were the Eagles and the Cowboys of all teams, Matt, swapped their first round picks. So the Cowboys got the 23rd pick. The Eagles got the 20th pick. And the Cowboys also got 2 fourth round picks from the Eagles this year. And the Cowboys, in addition to the 20th, sent the Eagles a 2027 seventh round pick.
The Eagles have also been very active in adding to the wide receiver room, bringing in several veterans that, you know, you would think are going to be in the mix. All this, I think, and given all the situation with A.J. Brown, this would seem to me to underline, put in bold, that A.J. Brown will indeed be moved by June 1st.
It's almost like Howie Roseman has a playback old-fashioned tape recorder sitting with him all the time, and he's hitting the playback button of A.J. Brown is an Eagle.
Again, A.J.'s a member of the Eagles. We don't have any trades that have been made or that are done. And I think for us, you know, we're taking this one day at a time.
That being said, it just seems very, very, very likely. I mean, there was an ESPN report recently from Adam Schefter that the Eagles are going to potentially trade A.J. on or after June 1st. And the report referenced the Patriots. Howie Roseman was asked about this report and how does selecting Mekhi Lemon affect that. Just using common sense, I would be incredibly surprised if A.J. Brown is an Eagle after June 1st.
So given that, and given all the guys I mentioned that they brought in, it would seem to me that Lemon plugs in as a number two receiver behind Devontae Smith, no?
I think there'd be good competition at the very least in camp. You mentioned some of those players that they brought in. Hollywood Brown, Dontavian Wicks, Elijah Moore, Johnny Wilson, who they drafted a couple of seasons ago, missed all last season with a very bad injury that he suffered in training camp from that injury. So I think there's going to be a lot of competition, but you draft a guy in the first round. If you think he's good enough to play, he'll play. And even if he's not a starter, I would be surprised if he's, especially if they trade AJ, I would be surprised if Mekhi Lemon, and I'm really fascinated to see how they use him in the new offense that they're going to develop with the arrival of new offensive coordinator Sean Mannion. I would be surprised if Mekhi Lemon doesn't have a pretty significant role with the team next season. Will he be a starter? I don't know, but you don't have to be a starter to have a significant role in a NFL team offense.
All right, thank you very much, Dave. That's KYW's Dave Uram joining us, getting ready for the final segment on this edition of The Week in Philly. We will learn about a former Philly star, second act. Don't go anywhere. Final segment on this edition of The Week in Philly, and Brad Lidge is best known in these parts for giving us one of the greatest Phillies memories ever when his strikeout clinched the 2008 World Series title for the Fightins.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out! The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball! Brad Lidge does it again and stays perfect for the team.
Now, his playing days ended more than a decade ago, but now he's making a bit of news with his new endeavor. For more, let's bring in KYW's John McDevitt. And John, what is Brad Lidge doing these days?
Well, Matt, he went from MLB star to Indiana Jones. He's an archaeologist.
Was this always on his radar, even when he was playing baseball? Like, was this always going to be the next chapter?
Well, he says it wasn't, but over time he developed a passion for it. He says ever since he was in high school, he loved world history.
While I loved reading about history, I don't think I could just sit down and read, you know, volumes and volumes of books in retirement. So I felt like archaeology would be, you know, the best way to kind of get involved and actually kind of have some physical activity with it.
He finished his degree in religious studies. In 2013, he decided to be a volunteer on an excavation site. He did that at an ancient Roman city dig.
I was absolutely hooked at that point, and I knew I wanted to jump into a master's program as soon as possible.
He's in the beginning stages now, Matt, working on his PhD through the University of Colorado.
And he now has a connection to the Penn Museum, correct?
Yeah, he's on the museum's board of advisors, and he is a consulting scholar in the ancient Mediterranean section of the museum. He says it's a full circle moment. He met the museum's Egyptian curators back in 2010. That's when he was playing for the Phillies. He's a top donor to their excavation project, and also he makes a contribution to the Penn Museum annual fund.
So dig down a little more. What exactly is he researching?
I see what you did there. That's good. That's funny. Lidge is currently researching the Etruscan civilization in central Italy. The civilization dates back to around 800 to 100 BCE.
So what does this research entail? Is he literally going out and digging and looking for things?
Yeah, well, technology has helped archaeologists understand objects and entire sites better. Lidge says you don't want to go into a mountainside and tear it up. Survey techniques such as ground-penetrating radar are utilized. That's to see underground. And photogrammetry. Photogrammetry, which creates 3D models and maps, and X-ray fluorescence, or XRF, that shows elemental composition of artifacts.
All right, pretty wild for a guy who, you know, everybody knows here for having a nasty slider on an 0-2 pitch.
For sure. You know, and I did ask him that. I said I would be probably yelled at if I didn't ask you first about your career here and what your favorite moments were.
2008, of course, is the crowning moment in my career. I just keep thinking of how fortunate I was to have been traded to the Phillies at that time and how great the team was. I've just been very fortunate to see some of the legends of the game and play alongside them.
And then we digged into archaeology.
Nicely done. Thank you very much, John. KYW's John McDevitt joining us. And that is going to do it for this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. This week's episode was produced by Brian Seltzer and Sabrina Boyd Circa. My name is Matt Leon. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the rest of your weekend.